Israeli forces stormed the home of Mohammed Jaabis and Ghassan Abu Jamal and demolished them with explosives. Ghassan Abu Jamal was shot dead along with his cousin Uday after they killed four Israelis in a high-profile attack on a synagogue in November of last year. Separately, Jaabis was shot dead when he ran an excavator into an Israeli bus, killing one and injuring several others. Locals said that the neighborhood homes sustained damage during Tuesday's demolition. Meanwhile, in a third house, also in East Jerusalem, Israeli forces filled a room with concrete. Israeli forces stormed and ransacked the home of Mu'taz Hijazi family in Silwan neighborhood before filling Hijazi's former room with concrete. Hijazi was shot dead on the roof of the house on October 30, 2014, after he was accused of attempting assassination of right-wing rabbi activist Yehuda Glick. Israeli forces detained all family members and moved them away from the home, local sources reported.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Cliff Verla, Doug McVeigh, and Jim Thompson. Our engineer is Sequoia Wright. And the KABU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KABU News. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Jared Dantzler.
And I'm Nicole Weinstock. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO, at 7 it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Wednesday Talk Radio, Paul Rowland welcomes Reverend Billy of the Church of Stop Shopping. Listen to the glorious bird song of the Stop Shopping Choir. Join the Citizen Weed Pulling Brigade. Exercise the Devil Monsanto from Portland's public parks. At 9 on Political Perspectives, host Jimmy Tardy speaks with Ivana Horvat and Adrian Hopgarten about their film Finding Bosnia, which presents the intimate and personal journey of a Bosnian war refugee raised in the United States. At 9:30, longtime peak oil activist Richard Heinberg talks about how the ideas in his book Afterburn, Society Beyond Fossil Fuels, matter. At 10, it's Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, The Bike Show brings you news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
And stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. KBOO's Jim Thompson speaks with Kathy Kelly about the bombing of a hospital in Afghanistan. Was it a war crime? Yo, good night, Nicole.
Good night, Jared.
Good night, Sequoia.
Night.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Was this a war crime? And do you know how to define a war crime?
Well, there are international laws that exist, and among those, it's against international law to attack a hospital. It's understood that hospitals are places that are meant to give care to the people who come as patients. And so in taking this step, I think that the United States military is going to have to deal with the intense resistance to accepting their claim that it will be under investigation. I think the International Committee of the Red Cross and Amnesty International and UNICEF and the United Nations Assistance Mission in Afghanistan are all quite in agreement with Doctors Without Borders, sometimes in French called Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, that the United States can't be a party to an investigation. Certainly there should be a full, thorough, transparent, international, independent investigation, but that won't include the United States and anything that's acceptable to the people at Doctors Without Borders.
It's difficult to investigate yourself.
Well, right, and I think the Doctors Without Borders spokespeople have been very clear that the United States had the coordinates, the United States bombed a hospital after they were told that you're bombing, you're attacking a hospital. You know, the times I saw were that it began at 2:05 and continued until 3:15 in the morning.
And I understand the attack was carried out by a C-130 gunship, which is essentially a large cargo aircraft that was outfitted with weapons that fire off to the side. So they were circling around the area for all of that time, and the attack continued.
And certainly they had the coordinates in advance. You know, one survivor who is a nurse said that words couldn't describe the horror and that they watched patients burning in their own beds. And another nurse said that the first section of the hospital to be attacked was the intensive care unit.
Well, that's interesting. Wonder if that was just by coincidence?
Well, it's so hard to understand whatever could have motivated this attack in the first place. I suppose to some extent it does, whether it was deliberate or not, it certainly does carry a very chilling message to everyone in the region that the United States will be willing to, you know, risk its reputation and attack patients and hospitals and their caregivers and doctors and nurses. So if you are a fighter, don't think you have anywhere where you could possibly flee or go or run from the United States wrath. And certainly there must have been within the military circles a great deal of anguish because one of their transport planes lifted off of an air strip in Jalalabad, and it exploded, and nobody really knows why, but I believe 6 United States airmen had been killed, and others who were, perhaps 5 others. So this is a cause of great sorrow and loss, but I hope there's no sense of revenge or, you know, now we're really going to show these people that they have no right to live. The antagonism and the resentment that will be built up in countries all around the world and the bewilderment, what kind of people are these that they would bomb a hospital and continue to do so even after they've been told? And then the other thing, Jim, that I think should be taken into consideration is that if you look at how the United States has spent funding that was designated for the USAID aid for international development, reconstructing or building healthcare facilities in Afghanistan. On July 25th, the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction wrote a letter to the head of USAID and very clearly laid out that in the number of hospitals that they said that they were funding in partnership with the Afghan government's health ministry, 80% of those didn't square with the coordinates, with the locations that the United States gave as to where these existed. 6 of the ones that they were supposedly funding actually existed in Pakistan, 6 of them in Tajikistan, and 1 gave coordinates in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. And there were another additional 189, which when looked at with, you know, Google Maps, basically, they call it a geospatial analysis, there was no building within 400 feet of the place where the hospital was supposed to be. So they call these kind of colloquially, I suppose, ghost hospitals with ghost doctors and ghost nurses and ghost patients. They don't really exist. Well, now we have a hospital that was serving in the week in advance of the terrible attack in Kunduz, 354 patients, 59 of them children. And it had been doing that kind of work, establishing a reputation all around the region as a humanitarian, trustworthy institution. And now it's rubble. The patients have been incinerated. And it certainly is a ghost hospital.
In a very real sense. And then, of course, there is a loss of medical services that will be widespread throughout the region.
Sure. I mean, it was the only hospital in a large region. There's a small city called Pulai Kumri, 2 hours away, and they would have a clinic, and then otherwise you'd have to go over bumpy roads quite a long distance, probably about a 5-hour drive, to get to the hospital in Kabul, which was already filled. Its census was full, the Emergency Surgical Center for Victims of War. And that's not the only hospital in Kabul, but that's where the patients who survived the bombing were taken if they couldn't be cared for in Pulau Kumri. But of course, I mean, this means that in that entire region, Kunduz was the fifth largest population center in Afghanistan. And there are many, many people if you just arced across the northern part of the country, who would have found that to be their major source for serious health care. And so what does it say to all of those people to kill the doctors, to kill the nurses, to destroy the hospital? It just shows contempt and utter disregard for any kind of norms of decency. And the United States has been in Afghanistan since 2001. $104 billion in non-military aid was spent in that country, and you can't find signs of dramatic improvement or even minimal improvement by most measures. Education, health care, removal of mines. There have been some improvements in women's education. I think maybe now one out of every four women between above the age of 15 is literate. But what kind of a gain is that?
You just mentioned removal of mines. You know, there was a story popped up today. They, in Munich, they just found a 500-pound bomb left over from World War II.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the United States had, according to a report last year, left many, many fields full of unexploded ordnance, because in their practice runs in Afghanistan, they would drop ordnance. And the question is, well, aren't you going to clean up after yourselves? And they said, well, we hadn't budgeted for that. Eventually we will, and it will probably cost about $250 million or some. I'm not sure I have that exactly right. But this is certainly a problem, because the land can't be used for agriculture, and people are afraid to step on their own lands because they don't know what might be underneath it, what kind of toxic substances might be going into the water system. And of course, when the United States broke down its bases, there were huge landfills filled with plastics, and then those are burned, and that puts more toxins into the air. So the United States' presence in Afghanistan didn't benefit people. The Taliban now controls many areas of the country, and between Taliban and other armed groups, the estimate is that 70% of the country is under the control of militant armed groups. And the Afghan government is in control of Kabul and, you know, some roadways, but it's a pretty desperate situation. And, you know, I also think the reality is the United States has unleashed so much violence and mayhem and destabilization that there's no way that the United States at this point can talk about trying to control it. No matter what kind of military might the United States will exercise, that will just create more extremist, more fundamentalist groups in the future. But I believe we should be paying reparations, certainly reconstruct the hospital that was just destroyed, certainly try to find ways through either the United Nations or NGOs that don't have terrible records of graft and corruption to pay reparations and restitution for the suffering we've caused. But I don't believe that the United States should be deciding where borders are drawn or who ends up getting the upper hand in these terrible civil wars.
Aside from voting for the right candidate and standing on the corner with a sign, what can we do?
Well, I think right now is a very good time to go to your local healthcare facility, either a trauma unit, an emergency room, a hospital, and make a sign that says, to bomb this place would be a war crime. And then another sign, the same is true in Afghanistan. And people did that in Chicago today, and they're doing it in Maine on Saturday, and they've been doing it across the United Kingdom and in various cities that I'm aware of, in D.C. as well. And I think if more and more people at least say, you know, we're not going to accept this, we're going to reverberate back to the Doctors Without Borders and the other healthcare people that are outraged and indignant, and our outcry is going to join theirs. So this is a very good time to do that. I think it's also very important to go into the universities, into the high school classrooms, and offer to teachers, to professors, information and say, you know, just turn over 30 minutes of your class or, you know, some point during a semester so that we can begin the process of educating people about how our wars have affected people abroad, so we build literacy about the consequences of our war and also how it affects us, because how can we ever deal with climate change and the problems that beset us in this country and still satisfy the bloated, obscene military budget? And then I think another thing people can do is, you know, just on the palm of your hand, write the word enough and put a hashtag in front of it and an exclamation point after it, and stretch out that hand, take a photo, and send it to our young friends in Kabul. They've got a campaign that they've started that they call the Enough Campaign. For them, it's the word bus in Dari. And they're doing wonderful projects. They're distributing 3,000 wool-stuffed heavy quilts to families that would otherwise possibly die of hypothermia in the cold winter, because they've got very, very primitive housing in these harsh elements of winter in Afghanistan. They're teaching 100 street kids to become literate, to study their math, and even to take courses in nonviolence. It's really quite wonderful. I can't wait to go back there in November and stay for a longer stretch. But they would love people to show some solidarity by joining their Enough campaign. You can just go to the web, just type in enough.ourjourneytosmile on a web browser, and you'll get to their website. And then people could also participate in a global Skype phone call on the 21st of every month and talk with youngsters from Gaza, from Afghanistan, from Iraq, from the United States, and hear their stories about what it's like to live in a time when you don't know if you're going to survive your teenage years because of the constant usage of weapons.